This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. Selling your car? Visit Carvana and enter your license plate or VIN. Answer a few quick questions and you can get a real offer in seconds. When you finalize your offer, Carvana will pick it up so you never have to leave the comfort of home. Visit Carvana.com or download the app.
This year's Oscar nominees for Best Original Song are headlined by two songs from Barbie, one from Billie Eilish and the other from Ryan Gosling. But there's also an intriguing mix of tracks from John Batiste, the Osage Tribal Singers, and Becky G, with an assist from perennial Oscar nominee Diane Warren.
What will win, what should win, and what criteria should we use when we judge original songs in movies? We've got answers. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Today we're talking about this year's Oscar-nominated original songs on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
A former president found guilty while running for re-election. For a story this big, one podcast is not enough. Here at NPR, we've got you covered from every angle. You can get the news as it happens and legal analysis on the podcast Trump's Trials. And for all the latest on what it means for the 2024 election, head on over to the NPR Politics podcast. Find Trump's Trials and the NPR Politics podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
When the economic news gets to be a bit much,
listen to The Indicator from Planet Money. We're here for you, like your friends, trying to figure out all the most confusing parts. One story, one idea, every day, all in 10 minutes or less.
The Indicator from Planet Money, your friendly economic sidekick.
From NPR.
This is Sam Brigger, longtime Fresh Air producer and sometime interviewer. In a special extended podcast episode, I talk with Maggie Rogers about nostalgia, her new album, and her decision to go to Harvard Divinity School.
I think at its core, music has always been the most sacred and most spiritual thing that I've ever been a part of.
Find NPR's Fresh Air wherever you get podcasts.
It's just the two of us today. There are five nominees for Best Original Song this year. They span a broad range of styles and sounds. We'll run through each of them. We'll talk about what we like and what we don't like. And then we'll make our picks for what will win and what should win. And we'll talk a little bit about what makes a movie song really shine. And there are some strong examples this year, I think. So let's jump directly in. First up is one of two songs from Barbie. What Was I Made For was written by Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell, who won the Best Original Song Oscar in 2022 for the James Bond theme No Time to Die. But this time around, they capture some of the more somber themes from Barbie in a ballad that became a big radio hit. It won Song of the Year at this year's Grammys. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Just something you paid for. What was I made for?
That song is definitely like one of the big takeaways from that movie, I think, especially since it plays at this kind of very climactic moment fairly near the end. Mm-hmm. I saw an interesting video of her talking about the style in which she chose to sing that song and talking about how many different ways they could have chosen to present it even after they wrote it. And I thought it was very interesting because that kind of like very breathy thing that she does with that song is not the only way they could have done it. I thought it was very interesting. How do you feel about this one?
Well, it is a kind of a little masterpiece of restraint. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting even to come across this song on the radio when you're flipping channels and all of a sudden it comes on. You have to turn it up. It's quieter than every other song on the radio, mm-hmm. in part because of that breathy delivery. And that could go either way. You could either find that boring, or you could, I think in the case of this song, find yourself pulling ever closer to it, wanting to hear it a little louder, feeling the kind of subtle shadings of this song. This is about as subtle as I could have imagined an Oscar-nominated song from the Barbie soundtrack being, right?
Yeah.
And I think this really checks every box of what I think of when I think of the kind of song that I think should win Best Original Song at the Oscars. There have been years where this category is overwhelmed by kind of generic songs that play over the closing credits of movies.
Yeah.
And maybe they like slightly brush up against the themes of the film itself, but they're really just kind of like, we got this pop star to throw us a B-side and now it's nominated for an Oscar. And I find that sort of thing really frustrating. And part of what I love about this song is it is synthesizing a lot of big themes from Barbie. It comes at a critical time in the movie. It speaks to the film. It's in dialogue with the film. Also, as you kind of said as well, it's a beautiful vocal. It really stands out. I suspect that this is the song that is likeliest to win. I think this is, if we're talking about who will win, I suspect that this category is a two-horse race between this and the other nominated song from Barbie. Mm-hmm. This is such a worthy winner in this category. And frankly, the exact kind of song I want to hear in this category year after year.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the whole Barbie movie is really a tonal kind of tightrope.
Yeah.
Because you're going back and forth between this silliness, but also this tenderness. You know, in order for the song to come at the point of the film that it does, you have to write a song that can survive calling upon tenderness and sentiment, mm-hmm. but also feeling like it belongs in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about, you know, that breathy delivery, that quietness, which does have a kind of a connection to the movie's theme of women and girls who feel small, who feel, you know, not seen. I think that delivery makes it possible for the song to feel of a piece with the movie in a way that's not as jarring as if it had been like a power ballad
sure.
at that point in the movie, you know? But I agree with you. This seems like the one that's probably going to win.
Sure.
So that's What Was I Made For from Barbie. Next up is I'm Just Ken, which is also from Barbie, but it is safe to say it is a very, very different kind of song. I'm Just Ken is performed by Ryan Gosling. It was written by Mark Ronson and Andrew Wyatt. It's this big, goofy anthem for Ken that soundtracks both a battle scene and a dream ballet. Gotta love a dream ballet. While also advancing the plot of the film, there is a lot going on in this song. I think all we can do is hear some of it. You know, Stephen, I spend a fair amount of time listening to 80s adjacent stations on satellite radio.
You do.
1,000% you could put this song
yes.
on an 80s adjacent satellite radio channel, and it would just seem like a pure, non-ironic banger.
This song is doing so much more than I think I even realized. I really found myself going back and forth trying to decide which I preferred mm-hmm. between this and the Billie Eilish song. And obviously, for one thing, even within the same movie, they are about as apples and oranges as you can get. But they're also both doing enormous amounts of heavy lifting in one.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, it's soundtracking a battle scene. It's also soundtracking a dream ballet. It is also an 80s pastiche. It is also a vehicle for jokes, for visual gags, for lyrical mm-hmm. gags, mm-hmm. for continued character development. It is wonderfully sold by Ryan Gosling. This is a very committed performance
for
at
sure.
the heart of this song.
For sure.
I would not argue with anyone saying that they prefer jokes to emotion and they want this song to win instead of What Was I Made For.
Right.
I can't argue with that. I think of these two songs when I'm ranking them, they are like 1 and 1A, though I do think it is thematically appropriate for Ken to be relegated to second place.
As, I get that. The other thing I really love about this song, though, is that one thing that you and I have talked about when we've talked about these kinds of songs is this idea of what is it doing in the mm-hmm. in the film. And one of the things that I love about this song is that it picks up a thread that recurs over the course of the movie about the relationship that all of the Kens have with this kind of 80s, 90s rock mm-hmm. aesthetic, which comes up with the use of
push.
I wanna push you around. Well, I This song is part of linking these guys and their vision of masculinity to a particular kind of music.
Yeah.
That's not just doesn't just drop in for just this. It kind of comes back over and over again. And just as like Barbie and Barbie culture is important to some people, the Barbies in this case, other kinds of culture, including this kind of dude rock, are central to the kind of identity of this totally other kind of person, all the Kens. So I think it is a joke song and it's funny, but it's also really smart, I think. And it's connected to the themes of the film more than just as a gag.
Well, and one reason I find myself pulling for this song a little bit, as much as I absolutely love that Billie Eilish song, it was written by Mark Ronson and Andrew Wyatt, who do such a beautiful job with the music in this film. The soundtrack and the score of this film are so important to why it works. I think there should be an Oscar for music supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the placement of Push by Matchbox 20 in Barbie. That is such a masterpiece of music supervision. That song is so perfectly chosen. You know, I mean, Mark Ronson is certainly a heavily decorated
producer.
I don't mean to suggest that he's never gotten his due, but I would love to see those guys thrown an award for the work that they do on this soundtrack that extends beyond just I'm Just Ken.
Yeah. So that is I'm Just Ken from Barbie. So our third nominee is called It Never Went Away. It's from American Symphony. It rolls over the closing credits of this documentary that chronicles John Batiste's attempts to write a symphony while his wife, writer Suleika Jawad, is battling leukemia. It Never Went Away was written by John Batiste and Dan Wilson, who is Mr. Semisonic.
Yeah, Dan Wilson was in Semisonic. He also co-wrote Someone Like You with Adele.
Yeah, this is he's a great songwriter. Let's hear a little bit of this song.
It never went away. Feelings just the same. Oh.
Pretty, pretty, pretty. Stephen, how do you feel about this song?
Well, it's a beautiful song. My central criticism of it actually parallels my central criticism of the movie, which is I found it very moving but not very revealing.
I felt the same way.
And I think lyrically, this song is pretty slight. Melodically, it's just gorgeous. And, you know, I mentioned before we played it, Dan Wilson co-wrote the song Someone Like You by Adele. And there's something about that piano line of this song that kind of echoes the piano line in Someone Like You, which I think at this point can and should be considered an absolute classic standard song. So for me, I found myself very, very, very moved by the song, even as it doesn't necessarily say that much. It's kind of a lullaby of devotion.
Yeah.
It's haunted me. It's stuck with me. It gets stuck in my head. And even though it rolls over the closing credits of American Symphony, it's very much in dialogue with Symphony in a way that makes it feel like it belongs in this field.
I think it's impossible to leave this film without an enormous amount of just such high regard for them. And I'm such a fan of John Batiste as a musician and as a figure in music and culture. The thing that I think is curious about it is that to me, this song is a little less interesting than a lot of the rest of his music in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think the symphony that he eventually writes, as well as this kind of piano solo that you see him do during this unexpected power outage, I think those are more interesting suggestions of what his music is like than maybe this song, which is a little bit more of, like you said, it's like a lullaby. It's like a Valentine. And it feels written for that purpose, but maybe it's not the highest example of his craft, even if it is what he most wants to say about him and her.
Yeah, I think my counterpoint to that is this is a song that is driven by emotion. That's something that I think is necessary to have come across in that movie. I think sometimes the movie drifts a little bit in terms of my interest in the film. I'm not as interested in his process of writing the symphony as I am in their relationship.
Yeah, I get that.
And I feel like something about their relationship I think there's a little bit of a barrier. Like the camera kind of comes up and I don't necessarily feel like we get a full picture of their relationship in this film. Mm-hmm. And so having a piece at the end of this film that really speaks to their love and to that devotion, I think feels necessary.
I get that.
I'm a fan of this song.
All right. So that is It Never Went Away from American Symphony. Our next nominee, you know, there had to be something from one of these kind of like big epics of this year. Fittingly, it is Wajaji from Killers of the Flower Moon. Wajaji, A Song for My People is the full title. And the film, as you probably know, tells the story of a series of murders in the Osage Nation in the 1920s. The song was written by Scott George, who's the first Native American nominated for Best Original Song, performed by the Osage Tribal Singers. It is a song of celebration. This is another one that plays over the film's closing credits. Let's hear a bit of this. Tell me how you feel about this one.
This is an example of a closing credits song that is in dialogue with the movie that came before it.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And so I think its presence at that point in the film is very pointed. And I really respect Martin Scorsese's decision to put it where he puts it, where he gives the Osage people the last word in their story. And the fact that it is a song of celebration at the end of a film that is a very sad story, a very sad and dark story about murders committed against the Osage people, giving the Osage people a chance to kind of celebrate at the end of their story is a really powerful decision. And I found myself just watching the credits roll as this hypnotic song unfolds. And it really took me through the end of the film with a different perspective than I necessarily felt like I had been given up to that point. And so I think this song is doing a lot of work in this film for a piece of music that is just rolling over the closing credits.
What this song does is kind of move the center of gravity back to the community at the end of this film that, you know, the whole sort of conceit of the end of the movie is Scorsese acknowledging via this device of his own sort of, you can call it a cameo. I think it's like weirdly dismissive of it, but it's when you see him at the end of the film, it is a way of acknowledging kind of his own role in the external way that he's looking at this story and the limitations of that kind of view from outside. And that this song is a very interesting and I think well thought out effort as you are thinking about kind of the conclusion of the story to resettle it around this community. I agree with you. I think it's very effective.
And I really enjoyed reading an interview with Scott George where he talks about the process of not only writing this song and the purpose he wanted this song to serve in the movie, and that he wanted this song to serve a purpose beyond the movie. I thought that was really interesting. I also appreciated the fact that he has said that one of the biggest lifts associated with this song getting an Oscar nomination was that in order to submit this song for consideration in this category, it had to be written down.
Right.
And that presented a huge challenge. This song wasn't written down. And how do you even write it down? How do you even note, like on paper, that represented its own challenge? And I think that's so fascinating. And that made me doubly happy to have this song included in this field.
So that is Wajaji from Killers of the Flower Moon, which brings us to our final entry. We've reached the point in this conversation that always must be reached, which is where we talk about Diane Warren. She has been nominated as a songwriter in this category 15 times. That's 15 times. But she's never won a competitive Oscar. She's won an honorary Oscar. This year, she's nominated for The Fire Inside from the otherwise not Oscar-nominated movie, Flamin' Hot. If you've never seen Flamin' Hot, it's supposedly the story of how Flamin' Hot Cheetos came to be. The Fire Inside, which plays again over the film's closing credits, is performed by the singer Becky G. Nothing can hold you back. No one can kill your vibe. That's right. When you got the fire inside. When you got the fire inside. The on the nosiness of this song being from Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie, and then it's called The Fire Inside, like when you eat Flamin' Hot Cheetos, like that is really something. Tell me how you feel about The Fire Inside.
Well, I mean, give it credit. You talk about the on-the-nosiness. At least it's a Diane Warren song that seems to have been written for the movie.
That's true.
That contains it. Look, there have been Diane Warren songs nominated for Oscars that have deserved to be nominated for Oscars. I would argue that none of those songs have been any of the songs for which she has been nominated in the last 7 consecutive years. Mm-hmm. As with the other recent vintage Oscar-nominated Diane Warren songs, there is what I would call the ChatGPT problem, in which lyrically in particular, this song is so generic.
No one can kill your vibe.
Nothing can hold you back. I mean, it is such boilerplate.
For a movie that sort of is that message also, right?
Right.
Nobody should be able to hold you back, despite the fact that, to be totally clear, it's fairly evident that this guy did not actually invent Flamin' Hot Cheetos, which is sort of the assertion of the movie, which is a separate problem.
I could go on and on about how irritating I found this film.
Yeah.
I do want to defend this song a little bit. It is probably my favorite of the last 7 nominated Diane Warren Best Original Song entries, in part because it has a little zip to it.
Exactly.
It's catchier. She has written a lot of very stultifying ballads in recent years. This is considerably better than those songs. Becky G gives this song, I think, a very charismatic vocal and a certain vibe.
I think better a generic bop than a generic dirge. You know what I mean?
Totally. Diane Warren is a Hollywood songwriter, and a lot of songwriters who get nominated in this category are major pop stars who are kind of tossing crumbs to the movie industry. And I think there is a subset of Oscar voters that really appreciates the fact that Diane Warren is a working Hollywood songwriter. Yep. She writes songs for movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that that constituency is really happy to nominate her and make sure she's placed in this field every year. And I don't think it is a terrible song. I think overall, this is a very strong field this year. I don't hate any of these 5 songs. And usually we talk about this roundup and I'm like, well, here's a piece of garbage.
I don't want to be misunderstood as not understanding how talented Diane Warren is. And as you said, how good some of the movie songs that she, particularly that she was nominated for early on, were. She wrote, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, right?
She wrote, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. She wrote, How Do I Live?
Uh-huh.
How do I live without you?
You know, from the Oscar-nominated Con Air. But How Do I Live is a fantastic song. That is a standard.
Yes.
I think that the song that she wrote with Lady Gaga, Till It Happens to You, that's a very powerful song.
Till it happens to you.
So you and I both have kind of stated that we think that the Billie Eilish song from Barbie will win. I agree with you about that. I do want to know what you think should win.
Honestly, I have gone back and forth so many times between What Was I Made For and I'm Just Ken. I have really come to be 100% at peace with whatever happens between those two songs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going 55-45 guessing that What Was I Made For will win.
All right. I agree with you. I think there is a significant chance it could be Ken. Like, you know, sometimes a song that's kind of a novelty song will make it through, at least to being nominated, right? Which this one did. Should is just a 50-50 for me. And honestly, any of these, like, if that's the name that they say on Oscar night, the other 4, I will be so incredibly pleased for the people involved that I cannot possibly have. And honestly, look, if Diane Warren wins on her 15th nomination, yes, I will be happy for her too. So I can honestly say this year I'm going to be happy no matter what happens. All right. Well, we want to know what you think about this year's Oscar-nominated original songs. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Stephen Thompson, this is always one of the highlights of my Oscar season. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, buddy.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, you want to show your support, and you'd like to listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode is produced by Skylar Swenson and Anna Isaacs and edited by Mike Katzeff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Keep chair dancing until then.
The economy right now is bewildering, impenetrable, inconceivable.
Not when you have the Indicator podcast in your ears. In under 10 minutes every day, we simplify the complicated news, like...
How does inflation drop? What the heck is a SPAC? Why are trendy little high-fiber sodas suddenly dominating store shelves?
And more. Listen to The Indicator from Planet Money and NPR.
When you hear Birmingham, Alabama, you might think about the Civil Rights Movement, but maybe not about baseball. But as the oldest pro ballpark in America, Rickwood Field saw the struggle for freedom play out right there on the dirt and grass. I'm Roy Wood Jr. I grew up in Birmingham, and I'm going to tell you this whole story. Listen to Road to Rickwood from WWNO and WRKF, part of the NPR network.
Every weekday, NPR's best political reporters come to you on the NPR Politics Podcast to explain the big news coming out of Washington, the campaign trail, and beyond. We don't just want to tell you what happened, we tell you why it matters. Join the NPR Politics Podcast every single afternoon to understand the world through political eyes.